I am Nate Neiman. I was appointed by this court to represent Mr. Stenson on appeal. This is a fairly narrow issue that is raised on appeal. It essentially, it's two arguments that have to deal with the same sentencing enhancement under Section 3C1.1. And both of these are interrelated. And before I get started, I just want to kind of go over why I'm not here. And I'm not here to argue that...
But you are here. Reasons.
What I'm not here to argue is that the 3C1.1 sentencing enhancement chills a defendant's right to testify. I acknowledge in my brief that there's extensive case law on that point, and that's not what I'm arguing. What I'm arguing here is essentially that the 3C1.1 enhancement, specifically the falsity prong of that enhancement, creates a situation where the defendant has to choose between his constitutional rights.
But the problem I have with that here, anyway, setting to one side the so-called exculpatory no cases, is I don't see where he has a constitutional right at a factual level to lie over and over again. You know, there's this exchange. The government repeats it around pages 7 and 8. Actually, it goes on for a while. 6, 7, 8 of its brief. And these are very specific statements. You know, did you ever possess a gun that evening? No. Did you ever touch a gun? No. Did you see a gun that evening? And he says he dropped his phone. I mean, and the district court makes independent factual findings that these are falsehoods. And then, of course, goes on to find the other elements of perjury. So I don't know where you get the idea that he has a constitutional right to lie about facts.
Your Honor, that question is well taken. I think that that's addressed by the Dunnigan case in the Supreme Court.
But Dunnigan is quite different, I think. It's not a case that says you can lie about facts. If you just say, you know, I didn't do it, you know, or something, you leave it at that, maybe there's some, although of course we have the later, we've got later decisions too where the Supreme Court's skeptical about all of this.
And I readily agree with Your Honor. I don't think that there's any foundation in the case law or otherwise that gives a defendant a right to lie. He has the right to testify, but if he testifies, he has to testify truthfully.
And now, so why doesn't that rule completely address the particular statements that are the focus of this obstruction finding? You're essentially arguing, I think, that you can't use perjury for 3C1.1, and that would be quite a dramatic position.
Well, I'm not essentially arguing that. What I'm arguing is that the court incorrectly found perjury when it found that my client's testimony was false simply because there was other testimony at trial that it believed over my client's testimony.
Why isn't that the way you always... I mean, the court's got conflicting testimony in the trial. It's not something that's a matter of confusion. It's not something that's a matter of, several different possible interpretations of something. These are binary questions. They're just yes or no. And the court is quite specific about what it finds to be untruthful.
Well, Your Honor, part of my argument is that this, if you take this logically step by step, and you say that in order for a defendant's statements, his testimony, not to fall under perjury, it has to be consistent with the government's statements. And what I'm saying is that if the statements that the defendant makes has to be consistent with the government statements.
Well, that's not really the case. I mean, he's just making, there's a lot of evidence. Maybe some of it comes from the government, maybe some of it had been from his side, but this is largely on page 7 of his transcript. He's reviewing the evidence and saying he finds the testimony of the police officer to be more credible. He's making an independent finding of perjury and not the result of confusion, mistake, or faulty memory, which, of course, would exonerate some things. I just don't know what's wrong with that. He's not. You don't want him to just find perjury based on nothing but saying, I looked at you and I thought you were lying. I mean, he's going to need a ground, a finding like that in something.
And I understand that, Your Honor. I guess that my attack on this sentencing enhancement in this case is general. The second sub-argument I have is fact-specific to this case. I would say that if you analogize this to a case where, let's say, a drug conspiracy case, where you have a bunch of lay witnesses or occurrence witnesses who are part of the conspiracy to come in to testify that my client was part of the conspiracy. Well, we know from past experience that their credibility is sometimes in jeopardy. So,
yeah.
Under the same logic that the judge uses here, that my client was lying because his testimony was not consistent, then with the state's or with the government's witnesses, then under that scenario with the drug conspiracy case, then there's going to be this constant moving target. And he's going to have to make sure that when he gets on the stand that his testimony is consistent with all of these characters that are testifying against him in order to avoid the
3C1.
Well, that
means he gets back to the original question. Can he lie?
I mean, why isn't his only obligation is to tell the truth? And even if there are inconsistencies, if the judge decides he was telling the truth based on his ability to perceive or maybe his intelligence level or any number of other factors, then he hasn't committed perjury because he didn't intend to tell a false story.
Well, Your Honor, I think that in this case, his specific statements are not the type of yarn that some of the other defendants in other cases that the government relies on, that they use. They're mostly denials of guilt. They're mostly no's. I don't think so. You know, those types of statements. He didn't spin a really elaborate story here.
That's true.
And a defendant should be able to get on the stand and do that. And the 3C1 or the 3C1.1 enhancement just doesn't allow a defendant.
Well, your
to
best
do that.
Argument is that he gets on the stand, tells the truth as best he can recall it, and the judge disbelieves him and believes the incorrect testimony of the law enforcement or other witnesses, right?
Correct, Your Honor. And I think that...
But that's what we judges do that all, make those types of determinations all the time. He has to, he or she has to weigh the evidence.
I think that it's proper for a judge to make credibility determinations, but I don't think that it's proper to say that one person is lying when the other one's telling the truth as far as this 3C1.1.
Well, sometimes that's true and sometimes it's not. No. Now, there are shades of that.
If you want to save a minute, did you have a question?
Let it go.
Yes, I'd like to save the rest of my time for rebuttal.
Rebuttal.
Thank you.
Mr. Paganini.
May it please the Court. My name is Scott Paganini, and I represent the United States. Your Honors, there is no constitutionally protected right to willfully provide false testimony under oath about a material matter. As this Court has found, it is proper for the District Court to independently determine the falsity of the defendant's testimony under 3C1.1 by weighing it against the testimony of other witnesses.
Is the independent determination the key thing in your view, or is the degree of detail of Mr. Stenson's statements also important? When we, you know, obviously we need to draw this line between the ability generally to deny one's criminal responsibility and no privilege to commit perjury. So
I think it's the independent determination. I think that's the role of the judge. It's to observe the demeanor and the manner of the witnesses and to observe, you know, to judge the credibility of the witnesses as the judge did here. Mm-hmm. And I think what the district court did here is proper as based on this court's precedent and other cases. And if there are no further questions, I would ask that this.
What ought to count as an exculpatory no?
Excuse me?
What ought to count as the protected exculpatory no?
Well, if you're
a not guilty plea.
Correct.
Right, for starters, but is anything more than that covered?
Well, I think that in this case, what's different is he's under oath. So that the not guilty plea would not be under oath. The answering questions of law enforcement would not be under oath.
Under oath, when this line of questioning begins, he just adamantly replies every time somebody asks a question, I deny everything. He just keeps saying, I deny everything.
And if the judge at the sentencing phase determines, it makes an independent determination that that was a willful misstatement, I think, as some of the cases that I cited in our brief, you know, they're the 1001 cases as well, I mean, that could qualify. Because if he gets up on the stand and testifies no, and that's a willful, he listens to the question, and the judge makes the independent determination that his answers were willful, that they were false, and that there was no mistake, no loss, you know, lack of memory, then I believe under 3C1.1 that is a proper enhancement.
So can he take the stand and say, I don't want to answer your questions?
Absolutely. That's different than saying no if you're asked, did you possess the gun?
The difference between saying no and I deny everything, you know, what day it is, you know, I mean, anything.
Well, and it also has to be material as well. I mean, if you know, the question was,
that's,
well, what car was the car?
Here.
I'm sorry?
Materiality wasn't a problem, as the district court found, anyway.
Okay.
Any other questions?
No further questions, and I'd ask that the court affirm the sentence. Thank you.
All right, thank you. You had a little bit of time, Mr. Newman.
Thank you, Your Honor. Earlier, Your Honor, you had asked one of the attorneys up here to formulate a rule, basically write your opinion. So
I can take all the help I can.
I'm thinking that you're probably
that's
thinking,
usually a pretty good test of the positions.
I'm thinking that you're probably asking me what I believe that would be. And I think that just as the Supreme Court has found that a defendant has not committed perjury just because of an inconsistent jury verdict.
Right.
That I think that a test under here would be, that I would propose for this court, would be that a judge making his independent finding as to the perjury as far as enhancement cannot merely use inconsistencies in testimony between the defendant and other government when formulating that. And I think that if the court was to adopt the rule in this case, then it would find for my client, with which I ask it to do so. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. And we appreciate your taking this case and giving the assistance to your client and to the court. And thanks, of course, as always, to the government. We will take this case under advisement.